It's pretty fascinating to hear about other people's stuff. I mean, it's fascinating to me. And, you know, I think most people are pretty interested in, you know, sort of the disorders that we live with that make us the walking wounded. It's really easy with the way things are going now to turn to substances to try to soothe our angst. If we have any emotional disorders, those tend to blossom under stress. So now is a really good time to be hearing about this stuff. People are fascinating, and the human spirit is amazing.
Michelle is licensed in the state of Nevada as an addictions therapist, and she'll talk with you about just about anything. Give her a call at 825-7529. Now, here's your host, Michelle Happy.
Good morning. It's good to be back. It's been a couple months because we just bought a house and we're moving, so I'm really happy to be back. And we're going to be talking about babies today. Last show was about menopause. This show is about babies, related topics. But before we get started, I want to just let you all know, if you have questions of our panelists today and you're too shy to call in, well, first off, call in. And the number is 825-7529. If you have any questions about babies or breastfeeding or labia or anything like that. But if you're too shy, you can go to my website, which is mhappy.com, and you can click on email. I've got my iPhone in my hand. It'll vibrate if an email comes in, and I can take your questions that way. And then what I always forget to mention is that all these shows are podcasts, and you can get them on iTunes under Happy Talk, H-A-P-P-E. So, and this show as well will be recorded and posted later on, thanks to Michelle Rivera, our producer. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning. I've missed you.
I missed you too. I'm so glad you're here and not at Burning Man yet.
Thank you. I have another 9 days.
Another 9 days.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you're here. Also, I'm active on Facebook and Google Plus. You can add me, and if you like Buddhist stuff, you can like my page on Facebook, which is Happy Talk, and I post Buddhist quotes there just about every day. So let's get started. I want to welcome our panel here today. They're from the Truckee Meadows Birth Network, and we have Tiffany Hoffman. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi, how you doing?
So glad you're here. Sherry Ewing, the shy one.
Hi.
And Rachel Ching.
Hi.
So we're going to be talking about birth and all things related today. Call in with questions or comments. Some of it may be a bit controversial. We'll see. Well, let me start with some controversy. I was listening to Dr. Bob on the way in here, and I mentioned to Michelle earlier that I wanted to talk about something he said and refute it, and then Michelle has something to refute as well. He was saying that he was talking about piercing your wedding finger as a ring, and he was saying that's mutilation and it's no different than being a cutter. And I really want to disagree with that. It's like the universe that you're looking at. All cutters have issues with piercing. You know, I've even suggested to some of the cutters that I work with to go get a piercing or a tattoo to, you know, the reason that people do that is to quell pain. When you do the piercings or the tattoos, it releases endorphins and it distracts from the emotional pain that people are feeling. But to say that people get piercings always for that reason is patently ridiculous. So that's body. There's a difference between body art and self-mutilation. And body art is, I mean, it's been done since the beginning of people.
Since
there were bodies, yes. Thanks, Michelle. And then you mentioned he said something about labia.
Yes, on the topic of labia surgery, the doctor, I don't know, I think he was trying to be playful, and there's room for that. I don't mind people having a humorous spirit, but he said, what, are women taking a mirror and looking down there? And I just thought, that's crazy. Of course we do. All of us have done it. So, Dr. Bob, grow up.
Yes. Right. Well, he's a guy. What can you say?
Exactly.
We're having a gal program today. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, and Tiffany, I think you're going to handle this one, is basically your mission statement and sort of what you all are about and how, what's your unity of purpose here?
Absolutely. So our mission at the Truckee Meadows Birth Network is that we promote the awareness and availability of mother-friendly care. Uh-huh. And so what we truly believe is that birth is a normal, healthy process. It's not a disease. It's not a condition. It's something that, you know, women can do without it being looked at as an illness.
Well, you know, it's funny because that seems patently absurd that people would think of it as a disease. But then when you think of it, where do you go when you're having a baby? The hospital where
exactly.
sick people are. Okay.
Exactly. And so we're a local chapter of a national organization, and we're a nonprofit, and the three of us are all volunteer leaders of this group. And what we all subscribe to the Mother Friendly Care Initiative. And so we have that listed, and I don't know if we'll go over that, what the 10 steps to mother friendly care is, but we're helping promote the awareness of that and also try and help the facilities in the area and the providers in the area, offer evidence-based care and respectful care and empowering care, because that's not what our system is set up for at the moment.
You know, as I mentioned in my promo, I had a home birth a little over 30 years ago.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And the reason I did a home birth primarily because my husband was absolutely terrified of hospitals, which is kind of an interesting metaphor because actually in many ways, we should all be kind of terrified of hospitals because of MRSA, and, you know, that is where sick people are. So, but as it turns out, he was pretty terrified of the childbirth process as well, so he was not too much help. But everything turned out okay after 44 hours. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You earned your stripes on that one.
I did. That's why I have one child, not more. Because I was like, after that was over, it was
the second one's always easier.
Oh, well,
did somebody forget to tell you that?
No, I learned my lesson the first time. So anyway, continue.
So we have a couple of things that we offer, and so I was going to throw it over to Rachel to talk about what our group offers to the community.
Okay, great. Rachel.
We have a monthly meeting that we are holding right now at Renown, and our next monthly meeting is tomorrow at 6:30. And we'll be talking about the fourth trimester, breastfeeding, newborn procedures, safety, wearing your baby, all the things that a new mom would want to know.
Interesting. So you call that the fourth trimester.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Babies are born to humans in a very immature
yes.
state.
Right.
They blame
Dependent.
It on our brains being so big that they need to be born before they can be mature enough to be at all independent.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture, however, has this really big idea that babies need to learn independence right away. And so what I try to do is kind of massage those two together and talk about what a baby really needs versus what our culture
yes.
provides us.
Yeah, you know, I think in the past, that whole push to push independence created some really neurotic people.
I would agree.
I think we're all on the same page here.
I think we are a product of that generation, especially. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we can learn from our babies and that connection that moms and babies have. And it really could be a very healing moment for our culture if our babies were really respected and really listened to.
Yeah, you know, and it's amazing once you have your baby, it is very transformative in terms of instinct that comes out. And I had a son, and he's going to kill me for saying this, but I couldn't circumcise him. I just couldn't do that to him because I saw when, you know, that first blood test where they prick their... I was like in a panic over that. So, and I also was an advocate of the family bed. And my son slept with me on and off for like 8 years. And now I have a granddaughter and she sleeps with them, even though, she kicks and does all that thing that kids do because she's almost five now. So I really think that's important because people don't understand this stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have lost a big part of our humanity. We have taught it out of our, you know, culture, and things like breastfeeding, things like, you know, being close to your baby all the time, the nurturing of our children. Mm-hmm. And we really, they're born, they're so dependent, and our first processes, like circumcision, are so traumatic and so just breaking of that child's will. It's a very horrible way to start out a life. And so what we're trying to do is balance that out with some real good information about how to nurture your baby, how mm-hmm. to avoid the things that are traumatic and unnecessary in the hospital, which is...
Should we go over that now, or do you want to wait?
What, circumcision or the stuff that happens in the hospital?
Just what is traumatic about the process?
Oh, there's so many things that can be traumatic about the process. Yeah. You know, I work a lot with women who've had really difficult or traumatic birth experiences. And how I started in that work is that I kept hearing every pregnant woman that would come to me, because I'm a massage therapist, would tell me about all the negative stories they hear when they're pregnant. I think every pregnant woman has been through that, where everyone comes up and tells you their horror stories. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize that this is how women process that really traumatic negative experience. They don't have anyone that they can talk to. Our society is not set up to talk about things like that. Mm-hmm. They say, you know, you're healthy and your baby is healthy. Get past it. You know, you're okay. Everyone's okay. And we don't see the mom in that. We don't see her experience in that. And like you had said, it's a hugely transformative experience. It can define who this woman is from here on out. And so, you know, the trauma that happens, I mean, like she said, it starts when you walk through the door, you put on a gown. So already you're a patient. You're considered someone who looks like a sick person. You couldn't tell you from any other patient. Mm-hmm. You're placed in a bed. They, you know, they monitor you like something's wrong with you. And, you know, it goes from there. Very often there are interventions that are, you know, suggested.
And those interventions are like sticking those wires on the baby's head. And...
That could be one, yes. Uh-huh. It could be augmenting with Pitocin if your labor's not going fast enough. It could be an induction because they've decided that your baby needs to come sooner than your baby has decided. And sometimes that's warranted, but most
sure.
of the time it's not.
And induction and giving of Pitocin are the same thing, right?
Yeah, well, there's induction is when they start your labor with Pitocin, and augmentation is when they speed it up with Pitocin.
Right, right.
And I know a lot of women who had planned on that not happening, and then that's part of the plan, and so they have to divert from what they had hoped for, and that's just the beginning. And then with that comes a whole host of interventions. It's a cascade of interventions that comes one right after the other, and that can end in, you know, a vacuum delivery or a forceps delivery, episiotomies, which I know doctors think it's a quick and easy cut. It's cutting of your tissue that's in a really sensitive, intimate area,
right,
and can leave you with lifelong issues.
It's so as a network, you oppose episiotomy and you advocate for of course, perineal massage.
What we advocate for is evidence-based care. And what the evidence says is that episiotomies, just like any other intervention, have their place. And if your baby is, you know, in a
way
place
too
where,
big.
Well, no.
No. See, you correct me.
No, I was going to say, I think babies are the perfect size for mom's pelvises unless there has been some sort of disorder like gestational diabetes, something that grows a baby that's too big for your body. Mm-hmm. But usually what an episiotomy is used for is when a baby is needs to be born in the next minute. It will speed birth up by a minute or two. And if that minute or two makes a difference in whether or not this baby is okay.
Oh, interesting.
That's when you do it. But it became routine procedure because, well, we don't want you to tear.
Right.
But the body knows what to do.
To do with the tear.
Yes. It goes along the line of least, you know, least damage.
Right.
It's easily healed. A straight cut doesn't heal the same way the body's mm-hmm. jagged cutting heals. Mm-hmm. So evidence would say that's not something that we do routinely, just like a lot of the other procedures. And so when a woman feels like she doesn't have information, she doesn't have support, she didn't have a say in her care, she can come out on the other side traumatized, especially if she has a history of assault or abuse in her past.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I think it's time to take a break. So we'll take a break and we'll talk about early childhood abuse and childbirth.
Talk Radio 1230 KJFK. God bless a child that can stand up anywhere and say, I've got my own.
And we're back. You know, I need to, I can see I need to come in the studio and change a couple things. Regarding the Tara meditation, we're no longer doing that at the Reno Buddhist Church, although I'm going to continue to have their ad on the show because they're a great organization. But we're doing it in our home now. So if you're interested in coming to the Tara meditation, which is every Sunday at 5, just email me and I'll give you directions, or you can call me. My number is on my website, mhappy.com. Tiffany, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
It's her birthday today. And so we were talking, we have four generations represented here. Tiffany is in her 40s. Sherry, you're in your 50s. Rachel's in her 30s, and I'm in my 60s, and Michelle's in her 40s. So we got a lot of wisdom here today. Okay, so we were talking about, oh, I need to say this. Please call in and ask some questions. The number is 825-7529 for those of you who are listening out of town, because this show is streamed online through TuneIn Radio and other outlets. 775-825-7529. So give us a call with questions or comments, whatever. So we were just beginning to talk about early childhood abuse and sexual molestation and how that relates to the mothering and childbirth experience. Mm-hmm. And I resemble those remarks, because mm-hmm. that is what happened to me. I was right. sexually molested, and I had one of those long labors. I heard it's related, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you can't take sexuality out of birth. And so when your introduction to sexuality was something that was against your will and not something that was healthy and for your greatest good, that plays out in birth, especially if it's something that you have not addressed at a deep level, both before pregnancy and during pregnancy. And I feel like those women need some extra support during labor and birth as well, because mm-hmm. sometimes memories are triggered. Sometimes there's emotions that you don't know what they're related to. Sometimes labor is slow. I know I worked with one mom that, you know, she was starting to push and she would back away and squeeze her knees closed. And we went on like that for several hours. And I finally asked her, I didn't know she had an abuse history. And so I finally asked her, you know, is there something that's holding you back? Is there something that, you know, we need to talk about? And I said, do you feel safe? And she said, I don't, you know, my family is a family where, you know, people don't keep their hands to themselves. And I don't know that this baby is going to be safe.
Oh,
and
that's, wow.
And so that baby ended up being born by C-section, because she could not allow that baby to come out the way that, you know, out vaginally, because that just was something that did not feel safe to her.
Mm-hmm. And women actually do have the power to hold it in.
They do. They have the power to stop labor.
Wow.
To, you know, slow it down, to not have that. I mean, yeah, they have so much power. And that's what I think is missing, is that piece of empowerment about how much their body knows, how much they know, and how, you know, handing all of that over to an outside source is taking away from the process. I mm-hmm. mean, no one knows this process better than this mom and this baby.
And it's different for every individual mom.
Every single
woman. Yeah. I remember my midwife saying to me, I would get in positions to minimize for me, it was pain.
Yep.
To minimize that. And she would say, no, you need the pain. I was like, you know, in the movies, but I can't say it on the radio. it was like, are you kidding? But you know, when you're open, that whole willingness to open up, I mean, that's a huge, it's the same sort of energy that allows a woman to have an orgasm, you know, to like...
It's exactly the same.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Somebody got an email. It wasn't me. I was... After Rachel and I spoke the last time, I went on YouTube and I saw YouTubes of women giving childbirth and having orgasms at the same time. And I do remember the pain of the labor, but the pushing part felt really good. I mean, it was like taking a really good drug.
Yep, absolutely.
So, if you're pregnant and you do have that kind of a family background, it's probably a good idea to look at those issues while you're pregnant.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, before if you can, but if you are pregnant and you that's in your history, definitely seeing a therapist who specializes in that. I know I do some additional work in conjunction with people who are seeing mm-hmm. therapists and helping people find where in their body that's stored, because I'm a true believer in that we store every experience in our bodies, mm-hmm. which is exactly why that comes up. And so helping them locate that and then helping it come up so that they can go somewhere and process that.
Right. Yeah. Because it is, it's a very meditative state to give birth to a baby. I mean, it's like, holding a yoga pose times, 100.
Exactly. Well, the same things that come with having sex and having an orgasm come with having a baby. It's the same. You have the same brain waves. You're in the same mental state.
Same general area.
Same area. Same hormones. It's all exactly the same. And the fact that we have parted those two things to the point of people can't even see the two together is because of the way we do birth. In hospitals with professionals that you've just met that day, how can you be in that intimate space, mm-hmm. In a sexual place with people you don't know, several people you don't know, in a brightly lit environment with no lock on the door? I mean, if you think about, how you have sex, it doesn't look like a hospital room.
And don't they generally have your junk facing the door?
Well, maybe not. Maybe not facing the door, but definitely like there's a floodlight and everyone in the room's focus is exactly on your genital area. And that to me doesn't feel safe or comfortable. I don't know how many people want theirs on. I mean, you may want it on display and that's great. But you're in a very vulnerable place where, your goal is the survival of your baby. And, mm-hmm. and this process is something that happens best in a dark, warm, private, intimate environment. And that is not what we've set up.
Right.
It's entirely the opposite. And if we're not producing oxytocin, which is what that environment produces and what helps labor come, we're going to have to augment with Pitocin because our body's just not working the way it's supposed to. And we have to overcome the adrenaline that comes from being fearful or modest or just not feeling safe.
So as part of your network, do you have referral sources to for home birth and midwives and those sort of things?
Absolutely. We have a resource guide. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say doulas are the big, gap bridgers for that process. Doulas can really be a big
help. Bring your
help
mic up, honey.
For moms that are in that environment that want to have that intimate space created in a hospital, because it can happen.
And what is a doula?
A doula is a woman who comes in with a family and does labor support. It's emotional, physical, non-medical, informational support for a new mom.
And who here is a doula? You are, Rachel.
All three of us are.
All three of you are doulas. Okay, so if anybody... I have a couple of clients right now who are pregnant, and I have clients who have children who are pregnant, and so if anybody needs a doula, I can.
You now know several.
I now know who to refer to. Actually, I've known for a while with Rachel. So
yeah, doulas are really important, especially in the hospital. They really can make a big difference in labor. They reduce the number of cesarean sections. They reduce the need for an epidural. They come with a whole toolbox full of ways to help a mom through labor.
And you, as a doula, are the intermediary between the mother and the staff?
Not at all. We are just there to support mom.
Doesn't it work out that way, though?
It sometimes does, but we can't talk for mom. Mom has to be the one to advocate for herself, mm-hmm. but we are there to remind her of the tools that she has, the power that she has, give her the support that she needs. When you're in a hospital environment, you're often alone with your partner, who is probably an awesome partner, but may not be the best labor support.
I can attest to that.
And even if they
cried the whole time. It was kind of cute, but it was not helpful.
Even if you have the most amazing partner who's going to be there the whole time for you, they need the tools that doulas have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they've never seen birth. They've never gone through it. They don't know. And we expect them to be these like Superman support people with very few tools, and then that expectation, they, you know, they can't live up to that.
Yes.
Unless they have someone, because that's what a doula is there to support, the husband as well. She's not just there for the woman.
Good.
She's there for the couple, so that
good
he can
point.
Be as involved and as supportive and feel like he's a part. Because I think one of my goals as a doula is to bond this couple through this process, so that on the other side, they, you know, taking care of a baby is hard.
Yes,
and
it
so
is.
And so if you come out of that experience, you know, resentful and not having expectations met, and not being in a good place, then taking care of a baby is that much tougher.
Yes. Yes. The sleep issue, you know, it is huge. Absolutely. I would say about 3 years, right? Or more.
You know, the reason that our sleep issues are so deep is because we have forgotten what babies need. And so our babies are causing us problems because we have expectations of them that they can't meet, which is to sleep through the night. Babies are not meant to sleep through the night.
That's right.
And if we accept that and know that going into it, quite often we can alleviate the problems that are associated with that. And we have lots of tools to help moms, you know, and families get through those years, but we have to remember who babies are and really what they need and put some more realistic expectations on them so we're not.
And also, I think mothers put expectations on themselves too. I'm a huge advocate of when you have a baby, you need to change your own lifestyle as well. And we'll talk about that in a second, because we need to take a break.
Oh, and I did want to add to that, you know.
Oh, you were just, you
I
just
was
wanted
waving
to
my
say
hand.
Hi. Okay, well, we don't have to, we have 2 minutes actually.
We do have 2 minutes.
Okay.
I just wanted to add, you know, even having expectations that there's no expectations, things can be wild. My mother was waking me up at 3 a.m. to give me feedings because I actually did sleep through every night, and she thought it was wrong and woke me up to feed me until her doctor told her that she was wrong,
wrong.
And
right.
that she should get some sleep.
What, you know, what I recommend to mothers is that when your baby sleeps, you should sleep. If you, you know, forget about the dishes, forget about having the perfect house. And I was what they called at the time an immersion mother. So whenever Wes took a nap, he basically took naps on my chest. And that's when I slept, is whenever he was sleeping during the day. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have people come in and clean my house at the time. But that was my last priority. Did I do good?
As it should be. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's what we tell everybody. Loosen your standards on your house, because you're not going to think about years down the road, oh, I should have cleaned my house. That you'll have regrets about what you've done with your baby. You won't have regrets about what your house looked like.
Yes. And, you know, let's take a break. I want to talk about the Buddhist concept of aversion as a cause of suffering when we come back, because I think a lot of families and mothers go there with that. So let's take a break.
You're listening to Talk Radio 1230 KJFK.
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby.
Okay, I picked the music. That was Paul Anka, I think. It was Paul Anka.
It is. Yeah. Good pick.
That's yeah. That one. Now, that's a generational song. And we were talking about generations when we just broke for the ads. I looked at Tiffany and said, well, you know, I'm a hippie. And Tiffany, you were remarking with envy of
right.
that, because I was real. I mean, I was there. And then we started talking about the generational, how babies were treated in certain years and how the karma of that, you know, the outpicturing of how that affects people as they grow up. Because I think our childhood experiences really affect who we are as adults and then who we are as parents and mothers too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, we were going to talk about aversion. I work with mothers who, not, I don't specialize in that, but certainly some of my clients end up getting pregnant. And often what I see is just a general aversion to really jumping in and learning alternative ways of doing things because of fear. And aversion and fear in Buddhism are primary causes of suffering. So, you know, I think people hesitate to go outside the box. because they, it's just a scary experience to have a baby, right?
Well, our culture has made it that.
Yes.
It's not, but, and that's what, that's kind of what we're hoping to do with our group is to change that perception, because you're talking about aversion, and I am a believer in limiting beliefs. And if what your belief is that this is going to be a scary, fear-filled, painful experience, that's usually what you have. And you said you had seen those videos of women having orgasmic births, and that's because they knew that was possible, and that was their belief. And so what you set out to be your belief of what this is going to be very often is part of what it is. I mean, obviously there's deeper underlying factors that are our personal issues that we have to work with. And so there's a deeper piece to that. But I think that your limiting belief system is what's going to create, you know, that experience for you, because it shouldn't be a fear-filled, pathologized event. And,
right.
And so, but our culture has made it seem as though, you know, we see it on TV, we hear stories. And like I said, women will come up and tell you their horror stories. We don't come up and say, I had an amazing birth. It was like,
it was
so
fun.
Beautiful.
It was easy.
I had an orgasm during birth.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't
and
talk
I hear those stories
that.
All the time, but people are afraid to share those because people are like, oh, you did not. I don't want to hear about it. You know,
well, what, let's see, what was it that Carol Burnett said? Childbirth. Just imagine taking your bottom lip and pulling it and wrapping it all the way over your head.
Right. And so there is, for most women, some pain involved in the process. But the thing is that we make women weak and submissive. And this is a process where they're, you know, women are powerful and strong. And that might be a quiet birth. That might be a wild and loud birth. It's whatever that is for her. And so defining that for herself is what needs to happen.
You know what happened to me when I was in the throes of labor is I became like way psychic. I mean, my midwife and her assistant were having a fight about
something. And you knew it.
I knew. And I finally told him, you guys work it out because you're messing.
Yeah, because that energy, whoever comes into your birth space, creates the energy. And you're right. Pregnant women or women who are laboring are the most perceptive they will ever be in their life because the safety of their baby depends on it. They need to know what every person around them is doing and how they're feeling and what energy they're bringing. And who you need to be surrounded by is people who come in with in an oxytocin-filled state, a love-filled state, people who are there to be supportive. And that's part of why the traditional medical model, they come in with fear because this is, you know, they come in with all of that experience of all of these things going wrong. And, you know, birth is only normal in retrospect in their mind. So that's part of the problem.
Listen to this laughing baby. Now, what's happening is you hear the laughing baby as you're being flooded with oxytocin,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And see, you baby can, animals, you're flooded with oxytocin.
Yes, you can feel it. And I also think that's why it's so important to have pets. I'm a big dog person because I think dogs are the embodiment of love. I used to be a cat person, but cats are good too. But it's good to have animals around too because it increases the levels of oxytocin. What's the one that's the bad one?
The one that opposes it?
Yes.
Adrenaline?
Well, it's
the catecholamines.
Yeah.
It's a whole group of hormones that are put you in the fight or flight mode.
Right.
And in labor, that is the worst place you can be because you are not going to be opening. You're not going to be loose. You're not going to be allowing that baby to pass through your body without a fight.
Well, because your body thinks there's danger and your goal is for your baby to survive. And so if you are scared, then your body will stop the process until you get to somewhere safe.
And it isn't an overt act of will. It's like an automatic
Absolutely.
Response, right?
Yep. Your body is very much knows what to do.
And this is Rachel.
Yes. And if you don't feel safe, you cannot birth your baby normally because you're not going to be able to get the oxytocin flowing in your body.
Corticoids. And, that's the thing I was trying to think of.
Yeah. I believe they're in the same group.
Uh-huh.
So we really need to set up our hospitals because that is where babies are being born, to have a much more conducive environment for women. And it can happen. There's just a lot of work that needs to be done. And that is definitely part of what we're trying to do as a group. And I just want to throw out there that on Labor Day, September 3rd this year, we're having a rally at Renown Hospital. And it's a
awareness rally. We're just trying to bring awareness to the fact that 1/3 of our babies are being born surgically now, and that is not necessary. That is something that is being...
That's crazy.
...artificially produced based on all kinds of different factors, but that we can do things to change that. One of the things we are doing to change that is a petition that is available on change.org to allow vaginal birth after cesarean to happen more often.
They call that VBACs.
The VBACs, yeah. Uh-huh. And in our Reno area, it is almost impossible. It's not impossible, but it's almost impossible to have a VBAC.
We have a 4% VBAC rate.
Wow.
Which is...
I thought scar tissue was stronger than normal tissue.
Well, the uterus works a little bit differently, but there's a slightly increased risk of a uterine rupture. However, you have a risk of a uterine rupture even without a scar. That is increased with a uterine scar. But 60 to 80% of women should be able to healthfully vaginally birth their baby after a cesarean. Our rate is,
4%?
4%.
Amazing. Yeah. And this is our fear-based patriarchal,
absolutely
allopathic medical concept, right?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it that the fear is what is creating this liability issue where, you know, women's bodies are not a liability. They are strong. They are capable. Women can birth babies. If they were allowed to do it the first time under more normal circumstances, then they wouldn't be in the position to need a VBAC, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
Since we are creating these situations, and we have so many women who have already had a cesarean that are going to have more children, we really need to give them the space to have the babies in whichever way they choose to have their babies.
And cesarean's major surgery.
Major abdominal surgery.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of risks and problems that come along with having abdominal surgery.
You know, I think a lot of women think, well, I'll have a cesarean because it won't hurt as much. But do you think
recovery.
About what's after?
Exactly. So many women have said, I don't know who would choose that.
Right.
They've had a vaginal birth and a cesarean, and the recovery is so painful and so long. You can't lift your baby. There's lots of things you can't do. And so they don't tell you about that piece. They're like, yes, it's quick, easy, safe.
So it's time for another break. This is flying. So when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about breastfeeding, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go.
Talk Radio 1230 KJFK.
People smile and tell me I'm the lucky one, and we've just begun. Think I'm gonna have a son. He will be like she and me as fears are done.
And we're back. I was thinking about my son getting a little teary. Okay, so you had some things that you wanted to promote. You have a blog?
We do. We have a blog. It's www.truckymeadowsbnn.blogspot.com, or you can find us on Facebook for Truckee Meadows BNN. That's Birth Network National.
If you Google Truckee Meadows Birth Network, you get the same result?
I would, yeah, exactly.
Okay. You might want to put Reno. Well, Truckee Meadows will do it.
Yeah.
So Google is your friend. And you're on Facebook as well.
We are. And I just wanted to let everybody know that we have an extensive lending library. We were given a grant to purchase books for new moms, new dads, hospital staff, doulas. So we have a huge resource in our area for women who
That's
need
fantastic.
Information. You can check out books from us. You don't have
videos.
Videos. And you get all kinds of information. And in that, we ask for a membership fee, and you get a full year's worth of access to that lending library.
That's fantastic to have a place to go. And so people could come to you and just say, I'm really, really scared. What do I do?
Absolutely.
Okay. Wonderful service.
Yeah, and we do a lot of referrals. So for women who can't afford a doula, who need to get some access to care, we have ways of making those kinds of connections as well.
Well, and doulas have to train and do internships in that sense?
We do some births that are generally at a very reduced rate in the beginning to get experience and mm-hmm. to apply for our certification. So,
okay.
Yeah, there's generally at least a few of us in the area that are working at a reduced rate as well.
That's great. I mean, you need the experience and they need the reduced rate. So
yeah.
That works out. So let's talk a little bit about breastfeeding. I breastfed My son, what is the average worldwide length of time that women breastfeed?
We don't know what the average is, but we know what the normal is.
What's the normal?
Normally, children will self-wean somewhere between the age of 2.5 and 7.
Right. And the average is 4. I know.
Yeah.
I looked it up.
And there's been a lot of...
This shocks people when you say the average worldwide, because that takes into account third world countries. And, you know, we're a second world country now. We're no longer a first world country. But in the third world countries, their nursing goes on for much longer because it's a better source of nutrition.
It's a better source of nutrition here as well.
And it is here as well, yeah. I remember when my son was little going to a pool party and this woman had a new baby and she took this powder and stuck the powder in the bottle and put water in and shook it up and put it in the baby's mouth. And I was like, that's weird. That is really strange.
We are a bottle feeding culture. We definitely promote bottle feeding all over our media. My children were breastfed, and when my son was about 3, we were at a store, and he heard a baby cry, and he said, "Mom, that baby needs a bottle." And I looked at him, and I said, "How would you come to that conclusion?" He had never been fed a bottle. He had never seen his siblings get a bottle. It was, to me, very eye-opening to our media influence.
So your son had been watching TV, obviously, huh?
Exactly, where he got it from.
Wow, that's amazing.
Dora the Explorer.
Uh-huh. Did you tandem breastfeed?
No, I did not.
Okay, so you have 3.
I have 3, and I would wean during pregnancy just due to personal comfort level. It becomes uncomfortable.
Yes.
Physically.
Yes. And I, you know, when you wean an older child, it's very easy. I said to Wes, "Honey, I'm really tired of this. Let's just cuddle." And he said, "Okay, Mommy." And that was it. So it was very, very easy.
Story. Yeah. Yeah, he was ready. And that's, you know, we again, want to push independence on our children so early that we forget what their needs really are. And it's not independence. They need to feel safe and secure.
Yes.
They need to be well nourished. They need to know that their family, their mother, is there for them no matter what. And breastfeeding is the best parenting tool for a toddler that I could ever give to somebody, because it fixes owies, it makes them happy, it feeds them, it's available wherever you are, whenever you're there.
You mean it's okay to give a child your breast to soothe them?
Absolutely.
See, a lot of people don't think that's the case, that it's the booby is just there for the milk.
We have this strange theory that we can spoil our babies.
Yes.
And it's so not true. The more you give to them, the easier they will become as they get more independent on their own. They're more secure.
Right.
I have a theory on that, though. I think that it's not so much about, like, people thinking you're going to spoil a child. I think underlying that is the issue of sexuality.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that if you're trying to comfort a baby that's too close to not using it what it's meant for, like it's supposed to feed the baby, and then it gets into the issue of, well, that could be sexual because we've sexualized breasts to such an extent that they're not, you know, what we use to feed our babies.
Mm-hmm.
They're what we use to, you know,
make our men happy.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's this great documentary on Netflix right now called Busting Out, talking about our culture's obsession with breasts and how it has nothing to do with sexuality, because there's other cultures. I think they said in Mali that thighs are the same as breasts here. And so if you walked around in shorts, it would be like walking around topless here. So it's all what we've created to be the piece that we find to be sexual. And I think that, you know, we talked about sexual abuse earlier. That enters into breastfeeding as well. If we've sexualized the breasts, then, you know, some women just cannot get to the point of feeding their child because it feels so uncomfortable.
I have a couple of stories about that. We, on Thanksgiving as a family, we always say what we're grateful for. And Iris, my granddaughter, I think was 3 at the time, and it got to her, and she said, "I'm grateful for my mommy's boobies." And her dad said, "Me too." And then the other thing about sexual pleasure and breastfeeding, there's a case where a woman called into La Leche League and asked if it's normal to feel sexual pleasure when you're breastfeeding. And unfortunately, she got a trainee who freaked out, called Child Protective Services. The child was removed from the mother it took 2 years to finally get to a judge. And the judge looked at the case and said, are you kidding? And reunited mother and child, but that was 2 years lost. I know it's crazy.
We're neurotophobic society.
Neurotophobic, yes.
We're just crazy against sexuality for women, especially, to be okay with that. And breastfeeding is one of the most sensual acts.
Yes.
It's not a sexual
act.
Yes,
we don't know the difference. We think that sensuality and sexuality are the same. So if something is pleasurable, it's automatically sexual, and that's
right.
Not the case.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And I just lost my train of thought. So because we're almost done. I can't believe this. It's 9:58. And I just want to thank all of you for being here. We could go on for a long time. And I felt that way about the menopause show. You know, an hour just isn't enough.
But women are fascinating.
Fascinating. And you know, when I was on my Facebook page, there's a picture of me dressed up in my 20s as Fascinating Womanhood.
Nice.
Which at the time was a very silly book. But anyway, if you want to hear the show later or tell your friends, it will be available on iTunes. So check it out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much
for
joining
us.
See you next month.